Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. This is the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. The Friday prayer massacre in Christchurch, New Zealand, of course, has dominated the news over the weekend, and much the harsh light has been shone on social media. Now, either as culprit or as abetting the cycle of violence that has come in its wake. Now, terrorism, often known as propaganda by the deed, is spread by images of hate and anger. And of course, therefore, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, all these could potentially contribute. Now, to get a better understanding of the consequence of this and maybe some of the issues, some of them very tricky, I have with me Alao Chak-On. He's editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my. It's a current affairs online magazine. Thank you so much for joining me, Chak.
Okay, hey, glad to be
here. Let's get right to it. The Christchurch massacre, you know, the question of the online platforms being responsible, online platforms abetting in it because of the fact that, you know, Facebook Live allowed for the showing of the video mm-hmm. of the massacre itself. Your initial response to some of the vitriol that has been spewed in the direction of social media, do you think it's misplaced? Do you think that we're all looking for an answer, we're looking for a scapegoat, we're looking for somebody to blame, and we're blaming social media?
I think that something like this would find its way out regardless. I mean, even if you block it on Facebook, there's still WhatsApp, there's Snapchat, there's Instagram. I don't know whether they're blocking all the channels. So you can't blame one particular social media. I think we're having a discussion just now before the show about how it's just human instinct, right? I mean, if it bleeds, it leads. So
yeah, that is true. I mean, that is the dictum. It's a cynical dictum that the media kind of perpetrates it for its own self-interest. But there are many media organizations that pull back from it. They don't always put the most gruesome picture. They don't always have all the details. So the media has, and for the longest time, practiced some editorial judgment, mm-hmm. And they've restrained themselves.
Yeah,
so it's not always that they will go with what bleeds.
Oh, I'm not talking about the media. I was talking about human nature. So basically, in the sense of, like, if it bleeds, it leads has been, like, the dictum for ages, right? It's because it plays to our most, primal desires. We like to see violence for whatever reason. We're curious about it. I mean, I can give the example of 9/11. Like, when 9/11 was happening on screen, everyone was glued to their screens. Like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? We buy into that drama. Now, should we? Is another a totally different question.
And should we enable it? I think this is the other thing. And it's the question of the responsibility of governments, or is it the responsibility of, other agencies, regulators, to enable this? Should we work towards, enabling our better natures rather than into, pander to base instinct? Now, I want to bring in the fact that, even though, in a statement that was issued to the Washington Post, Twitter and Reddit said they were working very hard to bring down the content, purge their platforms of, either hate speech or the video itself or some forms of the video. But it was sort of too late for them because in some areas, some companies are already boycotting. They don't want the association. So yep. Burger King, Lotto, New Zealand, Kiwi Bank have all withdrawn advertising to these platforms.
From Facebook?
From Facebook, because they feel that they need to take a stance against unmoderated content. Unmoderated content is the expression used to describe what is actually unacceptable today.
Right. Okay, so what's unacceptable, I would say, depends on which platform you're on. If you go to some blog, right-wing blog or whatever, everything's acceptable except left-wing thoughts. If you go to a left-wing blog, everything's acceptable except right-wing thoughts. And that's the weird thing about social media, right? I mean, it's a what do you call it, echo chamber. So that makes it difficult for us to assign, like, who gets to be the judge of what content is acceptable and not acceptable. But I think you can draw some broad strokes there. So, for instance, gore. There is an active Facebook filter of gore. Unfortunately,
you
there's
mean
no
violence and blood and
yeah, okay. Yeah. So sometimes our posts get flagged incorrectly. Sometimes it's like a Halloween thing that we're doing or whatever, and it gets flagged. Their filter is actually pretty good, like, can detect blood and that kind of thing. So it's already doing some level of work there. How hard should the censorship be, and where do we draw a line between that and limiting freedom of speech?
Okay. So before we get the freedom of speech issue, right, which is often an issue of governments and regulators. Here we have an instance where commercial enterprises have decided to boycott platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, this probably hurts more than governments because all these platforms depend on advertising. So the fact that companies don't want the association with platforms that seemed indifferent to the problems, the moral hazards of transmitting these videos or hate speech, is that, don't you think that's going to have a kind of long-term effect on the Twitters and Googles and all that of the world, because they're going to say it's going to affect their bottom line?
I have a rather cynical view of that one, actually. I mean, I think that a lot of these brands, they spend a lot of money on Facebook. We see some of it, like some of our clients boost the articles that they publish on our site as well. And the amount of money they're spending on Facebook is ridiculous. Even a small company like ours spends five figures on Facebook every month.
So, therefore, if they choose to withdraw their support, even if it's temporary,
I think
it's going to have an effect on the bottom line.
I think it's a very smart decision by Burger King and all these other brands, simply because A, they're getting very good publicity for doing this, and B, they're pressuring Facebook to do something about it and hopefully lower its rates as well. So that's my cynical view on it.
You don't think they're genuine in wanting to change the terms on which these platforms operate? It's merely a cynical move?
Can you imagine that board meeting going like, no, there's too much negative content on Facebook, we got to take a stand here? I don't know, I just can't see that happening.
I don't know. Because if they're working at this, right? Mm. If the association is a negative one for them, right? And people are becoming more and more conscious of wanting to, to want to have narratives that are positive or at least not play to the hate that is out there, maybe there is a commercial reason, a commercial logic that, converges, right? So they say, we're going to boycott these things because ultimately it's going to affect our brand.
Mm. Well, when you consider that about 80 to 90% of their audience is on Facebook, it's hard to actually commit to that from a commercial perspective. And all these companies, they're listed, they have shareholders. It's going to be difficult to buy into that. You know what I mean? At some point in time, they're going to have to watch out for their bottom line as well.
Okay.
So I think it's a power play.
Okay. We'll come right back and take a look at a singer and also a CEO, both who've decided to boycott social media. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Chak. He is the editor-in-chief of ChiliSauce.my. It's a current affairs online magazine. It deals with many issues. Have you taken up the Friday prayer massacre in Christchurch? Has that come out yet?
So far, we haven't found a way to add value to that conversation. I think that generally when something like this happens, especially something this hot, right? Everybody's talking about it. Everyone's got most of the angles covered. So in that sense, we just let it be. We don't want to get onto the bandwagon because that's not what we do. But a lot of people are.
In fact, Parliament today also debating this issue. and that's going to be for some time. Because like everything else, and you were just saying that you think that many of the companies that are boycotting social media are doing it for cynical reasons. It's a cynical play. The question is, Michael Finn, who's a well-known New Zealand singer involved in many groups, as well as AirAsia CEO Tony Fernandez, have also issued statements on Twitter saying they're going to withdraw from social media, Facebook in particular, because they think there's too much hate out there. Now, what do you make of that? I mean, you've got a cynical turn of mind, and I kind of get it. So do you think this is also yet another cynical play that, Tony Fernandez, and they're not genuine in wanting to do this?
I think that I am generally an optimistic person. But what is happening here is a lot of grandstanding, I feel. I think it's an opportunity for people to get press. UMNO issued a statement as well. I'm sure it's only a matter of time before other politicians come out of the woodwork to issue statements about this, because it's an opportunity for them to get
Parliament today is full of statements from politicians on both sides of the divide.
Yep.
Now, you can take the view that it's all cynical, and others will say that, in fact, without the politicians coming out and making very specific arguments, one, that, as Dr. Mathai said, that revenge will actually be worse than the original crime. Those who have now talk about solidarity, interfaith harmony, all those voices, you might say, is grandstanding to improve their visibility in the midst of all this anger and anguish. But others will say it's actually very good because it calms things down.
I think it puts
people on the proper narrative, the narrative that this violence is unacceptable in any community, against anybody.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. When I say that I have a cynical view as to why they did it, I don't question the effect of what they're doing. I think the question of what they're doing is actually good. Like, it teaches people to think about their social media use, so on and so forth. It's funny, of course, like, Tony announced his Facebook quitting on Twitter. You know, so you gotta pick one,
well,
right?
But he did say he felt that he still had a struggle worthy of the time spent on Twitter.
Correct.
It was a nuanced argument.
Yeah.
If you can call it that. Okay, let's just look at the other side of the argument, which is that people who are saying to him that by withdrawing, he actually vacates the space in which he could bring a more positive message.
Mm.
So if all the progressives, the people who are much more inclusive, withdraw from these platforms because of the hate speech that is available there, then in fact they leave that platform to be dominated by the negativity or dominated by hate speech.
I think to some extent, maybe on Twitter that might be true, but on Facebook it's not, because as you know, like, it's an echo chamber, right? You add people and you like pages that you like, that support your worldview. So people are already being told their worldview. They're not being told very many dissenting voices, especially like during GE14, right? I know friends who unfriended friends who, you know, thought differently from them. So we're purposefully actually filtering our content to suit our personal beliefs. So it doesn't matter if, let's say, you know, a few liberals leave Facebook, because it's not like the conservatives are actually on Facebook adding these liberals, you know? They disappear, nobody will notice.
So what do you think is a better strategy then? I mean, putting aside Tony Fernandez and Michael Finn, I mean, we don't know what's actually in their minds. I mean, we only know what they say.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think would be a better strategy?
So actually, I'm also the president of the Institute of Journalists. And right now, we're actually pairing up with Garam and the Foreign Correspondents Press Club in Malaysia to actually form a media council, or at least submit a proposal for a media council. Similarly, Premish from Malaysia Kini and a few of the other publishers have also submitted a proposal for the media council. So the media council is meant to moderate media by itself. So meaning to say, if we form it, then we will be in charge of deciding who is worthwhile to become qualified media in Malaysia, and then also like monitor their press memberships to make sure they don't publish salacious content. And this is a model that's worked in Indonesia, in Thailand, and a few other places as well, basically allowing media to monitor themselves.
Okay, but that would be for domestic stories. Now, the Christchurch massacre really is a global story.
Mm.
You know, the media council set up in Malaysia is not going to have any control over...
Fair.
All the other platforms available internationally. In fact, you know, just, you know, in this evening, we had another story of a shooting, a man opened fire on a tram in the Netherlands. Now, we don't have the full story yet. It's still an unfolding situation there. We can't in some ways control the message, right?
Mm.
So if hate groups want to put out the message, are we in some ways, resistance, as it were, futile? When it comes to situations like this.
It's futile, sorry, let me just clarify the question. You're meaning it's futile to resist?
Well, it's futile to try to control the message. I mean, hate messages can't be controlled. You're talking about a media council that will self-regulate, right?
Mm.
It's about self-regulation.
Yep.
We can't regulate what's outside of Malaysia. This Malaysian media council doesn't get to do that.
Yep.
What happens then?
Okay, so ideally, in an ideal scenario, everybody has their own media council. When you're talking about content like this that is free from any particular media, then when you think about it, the only media is Facebook or social media. So by that regard, I feel that pressure does need to go on Facebook to monitor these situations. They might not be able to respond to it immediately because simply, like, algorithms can't solve everything, right? Some things won't be recognized or whatever, but if public pressure is on them, you can't see them not responding. None.
Well, you know, I mean, there have been instances. I think Sri Lanka was a situation of hate against Muslim groups and minority groups there. And, you know, Buddhist extremists were allowed to use Facebook. And Facebook, despite being told by activist groups in Sri Lanka, did not, in fact, act. And so you have instances where these large platforms don't seem to act fast enough or mm-hmm. are indifferent to warnings issued by
I agree. I absolutely think that there should be more public pressure on Facebook, on social media, to be able to catch these things before they spread wide. I mean, come on, like the election, the fake news, and all these kind of things. So Facebook actually had their own media council, actually. They had prominent journalists from around the world join to try and establish some sort of guideline for what content Facebook should remove and not remove. And a few journalists actually left that council because they felt Facebook wasn't genuine about their intentions to improve media. Now, this is another factor at play here, which is that traffic equals money. All right. So the more eyeballs you get, the more banners and more kind of thing you sell. Now, the thing is, the cost of banners and ads has gone so low that people need even more views to stay afloat or get, you know, whatever they want. And that has caused the content to get more salacious as we've gone on. The more salacious your content, that's why, you know, all these hoaxes, right? It's not just like there's going to be a water cut. There's going to be a water cut because there's a dead, you know, carcass in the waterfall or whatever. So they always try to bring it up to the next level because that preys onto our needs and it pays for their advertising.
Okay, so we come back to human nature. Yeah. Stay tuned to more on Let's Talk. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Lau Chak On, Editor-in-Chief of ChiliSauce.my. Chak, as we call him. ChiliSauce.my is an online current affairs magazine. We're talking about the Friday prayer massacre in Christchurch, New Zealand, and it's all fallout for social media. A lot of criticism headed the way of social media, despite them, I think, coming out. You know, Facebook has come out, Google has come out, Reddit, so on and so forth, coming out to say that they are trying their best to contain the hate, the video, and also all the things that swirl around that video of the massacre. Is there a positive role for social media? You know, is there are there positive in a moment like this? Do you think there are positive messages?
I think one of the messages that didn't really get shared as much was, I believe, from a husband or father of one of the victims that was there. And he wanted to speak directly to the gunman and say, "I forgive you and I love you." And that was immensely powerful because, you know, there's absolutely no insincerity in that message. You know, he has no reason to say that.
Okay, so one of the things that we seem to be discovering about social media and what people pass on, so pictures or videos of cute animals get passed on very easily.
Yeah.
Hate gets passed on very easily. Yeah. Does love and those kind of messages that are heartfelt get as much traction? And if not, why do you think that's so?
So there's actually one of the guidelines when we're developing content for our own site is that, because our content is quite long form, so it takes like kind of like a mini documentary of sorts, right? And at the end, what we want to do is trigger an emotion. Because if you trigger an emotion, that's when you get shares, okay? Someone has to feel substantially strong about something to actually share your article because they're kind of endorsing your opinion or, you know, vilifying it, whichever one. And I feel that, you know, all those things you mentioned just now, is I feel this, I feel this, and I feel that. So you need a strong feeling for people to share. And the strong feeling can go either way. It can be something negative, like, you know, disgust or hatred, and it can be something positive, like inspiring and so on and so forth, like thought catalog or whatever, you know.
Right. Yeah. So okay. So so in that sense, you think these platforms are essentially value neutral. I mean, they're just there to help us amplify our feelings. You know. I mean, is that how you see? I mean, are platforms essentially neutral?
You're talking like Facebook?
Yeah. Facebook, Twitter, you know, whatever.
No, I don't think they're neutral. I think they're going to make money.
I mean, but in what sense? I mean, do they? They're there to make money, but essentially agnostic about the content that helps them make that money.
So, if you think that, I mean, if we agree that feelings is what causes people to share and engage, and Facebook wants to encourage engagement, then they're encouraging stronger feelings. So that's what's happening on Facebook, right? Initially, let's say something like this happened, you know, 30 years ago, we talk about it and mama, we feel a certain way and that's it. Now you have millions of people that you can, he's feeling the same. And then you have content publishers who are going like, hey, how do we amp up this content to make people feel more? So that's why we have so much extremism now, is because social media naturally, in its own state, amplifies feelings.
All right, so what is the solution then? I mean, should we be cutting out the negativity? I mean, should we be criminalizing the sharing of, of hate?
I think that's above my pay grade, but yes.
Yeah. Why, and why do you think so?
It's a very difficult balance, because what constitutes hate speech, right? And at which point in time do we get to the point where it's sedition, you know? Or getting rid of the Sedition Act, and hey, wait, are we going to get rid of it or not? Now, I once interviewed a Singapore minister about this, and the communications minister, and he had a very, very interesting answer, which is that basically all journalists think you should remove the Sedition Act because there's the Defamation Act, right, and the defamation law, and that's all you need to combat fake news. But here's the thing, fake news doesn't always have a subject. Sometimes it's like, you know, three black people did this, but they never identify who the black people are, so there's no one to defame. So for that, Singapore actually has a fake news law. That's how they justified the fake news law. And when you think about it, that kind of makes sense. It's scary, but it makes sense, you know? So we're entering into uncharted waters now. I really don't know how this is going to pan out, and I fear to say anything about it.
Okay, and your main takeaways from this, do you think, instead of in the other dictum in the media, is that, you know, people have short attention spans.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a big story for a couple of days, and then it's going to sink under the waves, and we're going to go back to, you know, our lives.
Cat videos.
Well, cat videos are the nice part of things, but do you think it will, the lessons will be forgotten, the lessons of how the social media acts and how we consume social media, do you think all that will be forgotten?
Do you think Tony will come back to Facebook?
Well, it's an interesting will Tony come back to Facebook? Should he? Because if he has a positive message, ultimately, will that in fact outweigh the negativity that he feels so strongly about?
Well, like we mentioned just now, I think Facebook is an echo chamber. So if you're going to influence those people that already think what you think, then not really. I don't think the influence is that big. I think the onus is on the media, I think in particular, because more and more, I think we'll need to depend on media that is credible. This is a huge point because, you know, with fake news, you don't know who you're trusting, right? And you know CNN is not going to run that far from the truth. You know, whereas you don't know whether, you know, rumpitboy.blogspot.com is going to run far from the truth. He probably is, you know? So that's a big point. I think the truth is what's important. I also think that moderation in terms of Facebook is absolutely important, and that depends on public pressure. So if you want to pressure Facebook to be more careful about your media, go ahead. I think that's the right thing to do.
What about media literacy? Do you think we're teaching our kids enough about handling information that's coming to them, in an avalanche?
And, right.
You know, kids already at a very young age have smartphones and they're exposed to things. Do you think there's a place for media literacy in our curriculum, for instance?
This is a funny thing. So when I was in Singapore interviewing that minister, I was at the lobby and there was a little brochure. And it said, how to teach your kids how to identify fake news. And my immediate thought was, I can guarantee you that a kid can spot fake news better than my dad. No offense, Dad. Because parents are the ones spreading all this stuff on WhatsApp. You know, I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, but my parents are actually quite well-trained already. But like everybody else, right? All this stuff is coming from people above 40. Would you agree?
Well, I have been recipient of information that was very old, that is passed on as if it happened yesterday. Yeah. Yes, it's true. And so the question is then, you're saying that there is no role for media literacy? I mean...
Definitely. Right. But I think old people need to be trained more than young people.
Okay, wonderful. So we'll wait to see how all this unfolds.
Indeed.
I think, you know, whether Tony comes back to Facebook or not, whether he takes it out, we would, you know, love to have him on the show to explain his decision, see where we can all share in an understanding of what's going on social media. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, I've been speaking to Lau Chuck On. He is editor-in-chief of ChingSauce.my, which is a current affairs online magazine. We've been talking about the Friday prayer massacre in Christchurch, New Zealand, and the fallout for social media, especially calls to either boycott or to regulate social media even further. This has been Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan, only on Astro Wani.